This is...
Wow! What a week.
What a week. Politics.
Dumelang, Sanebonani. Hello, good morning, good evening, good night, depending on where in the world you are. Welcome to another edition of Wow, What a Week, hashtag Politics, with Fresh and Botsang Modimowame Muilwa. Botsang, welcome.
Thank you, Brother Fresh, and good morning.
You're looking rather scholarly
this morning. I don't know what that scholarly means. What is that? Certificate?
Ujuishi.
Oh, okay.
Udijile.
You know, at Kokasiaga, when you were dressed up like this on a Thursday,
yeah,
everybody will think you are going to get married because komotle.
Oh, yes.
Black people in the old days were only allowed to get married on Thursdays.
So if you get married...
If you get married through Home Affairs.
Yes.
So if you are in a suit on a Thursday, there were allegations.
You're getting married or you're about to witness a wedding?
Or you're about to witness a marriage, yes.
Brother, speaking of marriages, let's actually start with the State of the Nation address by President Ramaphosa. We are recording this on the eve. In fact, the SONA will be happening later today.
Later, yeah.
So I need your predictions of what you think will happen at the SONA.
Fresh, I don't think much,
yeah.
And I'll give you the reasons. One, I'm expecting promises, lies, and a grand 5-year term plan. That's, you know, what I'm expecting. This is, you know, the first son of the government of national unity, and I'm expecting too much talk of a grand plan, because what I'm expecting should have happened, or I think what happened, I think. The president, normally, when they go on SONA, they'll go and consult the tripartite alliance, if it was the ANC ruling alone.
Mm.
Then he will consult with ministers from his political party for obvious reasons.
Mm.
And even to an extent of consulting with the NEC. Because every time before the SONA, there's an ANC cabinet lekgotla.
Yes.
Then comes the cabinet lekgotla of the government. So those consultations informs the president. And I've been in government long enough to know that would actually a civil servant be asked to give inputs to the SONA indirectly.
Ah.
For example, the minister of a department will say, in preparation to the input to the president, can we line up what we have done?
Yes.
What the government has been doing wrong, and I think it's going to happen, it will be to talk mainly of the minor successes they have achieved,
mm,
instead of reflecting on the promises of last year. Last year at this time, we were talking about the little girl Tintswalo.
Mm.
Is Tintswalo still in darkness and studying in darkness? Is Tintswalo feeling safe at home or on the streets or in public transports these days? Where is Tintswalo between 2024 to 2025? Before you set the tone,
mm,
of what you are planning to do next year, SONA is not a 5-year plan of government.
Mm.
It's actually an annual statement of the president to set the tone for the government to run.
Mm.
But before you set the tone, you should be in a position to state what have you done in what you promised, to account for your promise of last year.
Yeah.
And if we look at it, we reflect, I think they're going to boast with the fact that we spent 300 days without load shedding. It was called load reduction, but there were people in darkness.
And that shouldn't be, in fact, that's the first thing I thought. And the irony is, when they celebrated, I think it was 300 days,
yes.
The irony is, was it the same day or the next day that load shedding happened again?
The day they announced, but it happened the following day, on a weekend.
Because for me, it shouldn't be an achievement that you've done your job.
If a fish swims...
You know what it's like saying?
You don't clap hands.
It's like a absent father who has reappeared.
Yes.
Bragging about how I've been coming through for my children for 20 days now. We expected of you.
You're expected to be there forever. Exactly.
That's what we're paying for.
And that's what is my worry about what's going to happen with the SONA statement. The inputs from political parties, I'm expecting them, because I don't think President Ramaphosa will want to rattle, you know, the political parties, the members of the GNU.
Mm.
I don't think they will want to rattle already the uneasy GNU.
Mm.
So I think we are going to see then witness members of the GNU clapping hands, But the opposition in the MK and EFF, they will do what they would normally be expected to do as the opposition.
But don't you feel like the MK have been loudly quiet in anything to do with the SONA? Because by now, there should have been some sort of, this is what we expect or this is what we predict as opposition. I almost feel like the EFF have been a bigger opposition than the MK lately.
Okay, and I agree with you. One, the EFF has this ability of organizing its press conferences.
Yes.
And they still get reported to in the mainstream media. Mm. That's the first advantage. The third advantage is that the EFF has been in the opposition benches towards the SONA. So they've got experience and you can't take it from them.
Okay.
The controversies, I also think the party has taken a different approach, knowing that the media doesn't like them or doesn't report on their activities. I think they decided to keep back and hold this back until the questions and answers of the SONA.
So do you
and
think
we'll see
strategic?
Their robustness. There's a strategic silence.
Okay.
And we'll see their robustness there when they present their questions, you know, to the head of state on the question and answer session. Mm. One of the things that I know is going to come out very strongly from the controversies of party. It is the question of the Expropriation Act.
The bill. The bill.
Well, it's no longer the bill. It's the act now. Yeah. I think they're going to come back very strongly. That is the only thing that in the recent days they have said the government is misleading the people. Actually, I looked at the interview of one of their MPs, Andy Mdikama, and he was saying they are going to poke holes and show the people that the people they voted for ahead of controversies, they don't actually care about the landless African people in their own land. Mm. So I'm expecting them to make noise there. The rest of the team players, you know, there's even rumors now that Rise Mzansi is considering to join participate fully and join the GNU. Mm. I must say, I'm a little bit disappointed by the Rise Mzansi leader. I expected more from him, an educated person, a seasoned politician, somebody who comes from a business or what you corporate. Mm. The things that he was saying when he was campaigning and the conduct now.
Things like what?
Look, he was talking about anti-corruption and all. He was talking about good governance and proper public administration, you know, of politicians, how they must account and conduct themselves. Mm. He is the head of SCOPA now.
Sure.
He's actually in a very strategic and pivotal position to can advance the policies of his political party. Mm. But I'm not hearing that. I think I actually even hear the noise made by the Bosa leader, Musi Maimane, more than the Rise Mzansi leader on issues of good governance. And again, somebody may say, Musi Maimane is a seasoned politician.
Yeah.
He has been there.
Songezo is...
He's an academic who came up from business and corporate.
Sure.
I don't know if it's lack of knowing how to play politics and how politics work. And he's still, as the head of SCOPA, you are actually one of the ears and the eyes of the state.
And surely then he's perfectly positioned being in SCOPA.
Yes. You know, the previous head of SCOPA was the leader of Inkatha Freedom Party, Hlengwa, who is the deputy minister of transport now. He feared nobody. Mm. And Inkatha Freedom Party was the fourth largest party in the country at the moment. Mm. And I expect more from him. But the DA, Patriotic Alliance, the PAC, we're going to hear what the PAC is going to say on the questions, because sitting in the parliamentary benches, you have to push the position and political position of your party.
Absolutely.
And again, what I heard at somebody correcting and talking about what I mentioned last week. You remember last week, one of my concerns when we spoke about the act, expropriation, I said, in my books, I think it's wrongly placed to be placed at the public works, which is only focusing on the assets of the state.
Yeah, more infrastructure.
More infrastructural, and not even the majority of infrastructure, because roads, railways, ports are part of the infrastructure, and they're not owned by public works, you understand? And I've heard advocate Tembekang
Ngokai Tobi
talking about the same thing, to say he thinks it's only also wrongly placed.
Yeah.
I've heard him during the course of the week saying that. And I think it's a misconception of the DA is born from that, that this expropriation bill is them who have to implement it. That's a misconception. You've got the Pan-Africanist Congress of Azania president leading the land, agricultural land. You've got the ANC with a minister, minerals, and what do they call it now? Minerals and energy.
Yes.
In Gwenemantashe. You know, that's land, actually. And that the land, the part of the land that is controlled and owned by transport, the harbors, the seaports, as well as the land that is being owned and controlled by minerals and energy in the forms of mines.
Yeah.
If you look at the revenue that comes from there, and what we can generate for the country from those pieces of land or those sorts types of land, it way outclasses the ownership of buildings that the state owned. And I think that's one of the things that the GNU is going to battle with, the placement of the expropriation bill.
In fact, let's talk about the Expropriation Act, because I suspect because of the fear-mongering of the likes of your AfriForums, your DAs, the fact that they've even gone to the US on whole campaigns.
Yes.
Expecting the US to interfere in a sovereign state and how it runs its affairs, I think those chickens have come home to roost. Donald Trump the other day posting on his Truth social media network that all aid to South Africa will be cut because people's land is being taken. Horrible things are happening. Marco Rubio has said that the US will not be a part of the G20 summit later this year for the same reason.
Yes.
Another first thing I'm asking you is this. Do none of these people have people who bother to read and research that they can say to them, here are the facts. Before you go onto social media and spew your drivel, here are the facts.
Tato, I don't understand. I understand. I don't think it's lack of advisors or they can't read. I don't think that's the reason.
In fact, for instance, the other day, Elon Musk was commenting about a racist legislation.
Yes.
And Advocate Tulima Donsela put him in his place with facts and even suggested various books they could read so that they can bring themselves up to speed. And I tweeted and I said, do you think these people care about facts or about reading?
They don't. It's not about they don't know. I mean, Elon Musk, his roots are in South Africa. And this expropriation bill, let me start there first. Mm. Expropriation Act has been in South Africa since 1975.
Yes.
In the late 70s and the 80s, the apartheid government used the expropriation bill. Mm. That's why it was, when it was still the bill, it was the amendment of the expropriation bill of 1975. Mm. It's not a new bill. It has been amended. It's a new act now. I can tell you between 85 and 90% of this 1975 bill is still as it is.
Yeah.
That's why I put a correction last week and I said people must not make a mistake to think this is expropriation of land without compensation.
Or that we're going to just come and take your house.
No, 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 no. It's not even focusing on private property mostly. Yeah. Mm. Mostly it's focusing on commercial property. That's the first part. They know fresh. They are well informed. These are not stupid people. Trump, his a racist white boy mask, and their foreign secretary, they know the truth. They've got an embassy. The USA, I can tell you, it has over 500 intelligence agents located all over South Africa.
Mm.
They know, they write reports from their president. Mm. And this, they started writing about this act when it was still a bill, when it was still debated in parliament. The Democratic Alliance, as well as organizations like AfriForum, they've taken this matter to the U.S. before the elections to threaten the ANC if they put this bill into act or the president signs it into an act of law that America should aid them. You remember at some stage even a former journalist, or I don't know if she's still a journalist, Tabi and some other journalists, a guy from Zimbabwe, went to even address a lower house of the Senate.
Oh, I remember,
in the U.S. And these were some of the things that were touched by the Americans and questioned to these people. Now, I think it's sheer arrogance. It is the Americans conducting themselves in a manner that suits them. Mm. And I've always said, and when we spoke about America punishing African states regarding the AGOA, mm. I said, let the Americans do what they do best. Mm. We should be focusing on what are the African leaders doing? How do they react to such? And as an our reaction to such, our first reaction, sadly, it came from Minister Gwede Mantashe. Mm. And I think, you know, people like Tony Leon, the former ambassador and DA leader, and others, they've handled this thing better than the presidency itself. Mm. And I'll tell you why. Gwede Mantashe was on stage, and he became a Trump of South Africa.
Yes.
He also lost it and started, you know, there's this...
If they don't give us aid, we won't give them minerals.
Yeah, and you know what was the platform?
Yeah.
The mining sector or seminar that is happening in Durban, in Cape Town.
Yes.
Coincidentally, this mining in Durban happens when the SONA is coming, when we have just signed this expropriation bill, when Trump has been making noise in the last 2 weeks about funding of programs in South Africa, and when we are about to host the G20 summit.
Mm.
So Gwede goes and makes this noise, but Minister Lamola goes and calls Mr. Mantashe to order because he was stepping into the territory of international relations.
Mm.
And it's okay, it's comrades, they did it at home. But look, flip the coin and look at how the American State Secretary or Secretary of State, which is their foreign minister.
Hey, Marco Rubio.
Yes, Marco Rubio, goes and makes such utterances and nobody calls him to order in the USA
mm.
or correct him.
Mm.
He knows the truth. He was just, if you look at his tweet.
So are you saying that intentionally spreading lies
they are,
about South Africa?
Versus, they are fresh.
Versus they don't know better.
No, they know. They know. They are just spreading lies and fueling what has already started. And this leads us to consider, when did America start threatening and attacking South Africa? After the ICJ and ICC cases.
Mm.
It started there. So they've just been adding and adding. And then they had the elections. And they were very clear on their position. At the beginning, I think the Americans did not want to show that the attack is on South Africa.
Mm.
They started talking about Africa as a whole. Then they went to the BRICS group. You understand? And that has rattled us as a nation. I see a lot of people are rattled. And I mean, if you want to see that we are rattled, it's when you see that the foreign minister is, or the Department of International Relations and Cooperation, compare this era with the Naledi Pandor era.
Mm.
I'm not taking anything away from Minister Lamola,
mm.
but compare that how Naledi Pandor or Dr. Naledi Pandor would have responded directly to any false accusations. And you know, it shows the kind of leadership. But the second part is...
But does it also not speak to the levels of experience between the two?
Yeah, but when we are giving that portfolio, that's why I'm saying I don't want to take anything from Minister Lamola.
Yes.
You understand? If you are giving a portfolio, you know, fresh, at the age... must not matter, because you don't get experience with age only.
Mm.
You get experience by learning, by observing and informing yourself.
Mm.
You know, I always boast and say, I became a diplomat at age 24. It was unheard of.
Yeah.
I became an ambassador, an acting ambassador at age 28. Mm. I never faltered. But because I was informing myself, I focused on what I needed to do.
Mm.
You see, like him calling Gwede Mantashe to order. It was like you're overstepping, you understand?
Mm, mm.
But you should have also read that Gwede was saying that out of emotions,
mm.
talking about what the minerals that he's being appointed to manage of the country. I think Gwede Mantashe was puffing hot air, actually. I think it was an excitement statement. He knows that you can, how do you take minerals or stop your minerals to go to America when the Americans owns mines in South Africa? It's their mines.
Mm.
The only way you stop them is to expropriate or repossess the mines.
Mm.
But to say we won't take our minerals to the U.S. household when they own these mines, or that their companies or American companies own the mines.
Maybe he was reading from the same book that Trump was reading from, where he thinks he can just take over Gaza. We're gonna take it over. We're gonna own it. We're gonna do great things with Gaza.
You know. Speaking of Gaza,
no.
I don't know if we have finished the statement about
that orange man.
I told you, South Africans of the world must buckle up, including the Americans. The mad one is on the chair. The world will never be the same.
You know, we can talk all we want about dictators of the world.
Mm-hmm.
The world has never seen anything like this.
No, they've never. Well, let's compare what Donald Trump said about Gaza.
Yeah.
If that was said by President Putin about Ukraine or any other country, the whole world will be up in arms at the moment. Mm. But there was a funny part of it. Let me bring the softer part of it before we get into him occupying Gaza. You know, somebody wrote that he tweeted first to, it was, so part of it was the part of the prevention of HIV.
Yes.
Like they were helping South Africa, that it was going to Gaza. And then he stood up and said, you know, all are part of the HIV program, the FAFPAF or something like that.
PEPFAR.
PEPFAR, yes. Yeah. That it goes to a province of Gaza. Mm. He fumed so much that his aides didn't tell him which Gaza.
Yes.
So the people did not know that it was not to Gaza, the strip in the Middle East. Mm. It was Gaza, the province in Mozambique.
Ah.
And he complained. They removed the tweet to say, so we've been buying condoms for Hamas that they were using to put on their firearms in order for them not to get sand or dust or to even make bombs with condoms, you know, like what we used to just use the Molotovs.
But America, you see what you've done?
Yeah. So this PEPFAR or whatever money that the Americans were paying for Gaza and for HIV and AIDS, it was not Gaza Strip.
It was
Gaza, the province in Mozambique. And President Trump, again, because of not listening or because of not being advised properly, he thought it's Gaza in the Middle East. It's Gaza. That's why, fast forward, a few days after that, he talked about how he wants to turn Gaza into the best, what do you call it, tourist destination in the world.
And probably a massive a golf destination.
Yes.
Is what he probably turned the strip into.
And with his hotel empire. You know, he's a hotel magnate. But remember, Tato, I said in one of our old episodes, people must look at history, what America does when they start the war or when they fight another country. They destroy everything when they are directly involved in order to come and rebuild.
They become heroes.
They
and
become,
say, we're going to rebuild Iraq.
Yes.
Iraq should not have been bombed like that.
Yes, Libya, Iraq, Yemen, everywhere where Afghanistan, where America destroyed, they will send American companies. It's an economic, the military.
You're creating jobs for your
people. You're creating jobs for your people. The military goes and destroys.
Mm.
And they generate revenue by doing what? By these companies going there to, and everything becomes Americanized in that country. Mm. They've been doing it from the 60s.
So it's an age-old playbook.
It's an old, it doesn't start with Trump. It doesn't start with Trump. But the George W. Bush.
It's just that he's shameless in how he does it.
Yeah, he is doing it shamelessly, and he's being seen as a racist Republican vis-a-vis the so-called diluted Democrats. But that's how America operates.
Mm.
And people are saying, why does he think it's possible to do that? Let us face
who's
reality.
Who's going to stop him?
Who's going to stop him? If he told Netanyahu, on the, did you see the reaction of Netanyahu? And now Israel, now they've responded to say, yes, they think it should be done, but partially, and they will support it. And they set their terms, you know, and conditions.
But where in the world is it even acceptable to think you can go and just expropriate someone else's land and build there and say the people of the world will come and live here?
Yeah.
Other rich countries must take this 2 million people.
Not even rich, and neighboring countries.
Neighboring countries, Jordan, Egypt, you must give them land. We'll build them nice towns. They'll be the best towns ever. There'll be nice towns. There'll be nothing nicer than these towns.
But that's how the Americans work. And let me tell you, with Hamas or with the Palestinians, they will fight to the bitter end. They will not give away their land. They would rather die.
No, but haven't the Germans already stood up and said that the Gaza Strip belongs to Palestinians?
Yeah, but Germans are also talking historically in order to hide their Holocaust and what were they. Anything that will actually expose their history, they will be against it. And fresh, as you said earlier, who will stop America from doing that? What will stop America from doing that?
I'm actually happy Trump is doing all of this because it's an opportunity for us to see exactly how NATO rolls.
Yes.
This is an opportunity for NATO to actually stand up and take a position that might not be what America want, but what is right,
yes,
and put them in on the right side of history. Because there's that opportunity right now. And the silence of the many nations that have said nothing,
mm-hmm,
about these utterances about Gaza is very telling in itself.
And not only about Gaza. Remember last week or a week before, the first week he was in office, he was talking about expropriating land in Greenland. And,
yes, we must take Greenland.
And the Canary Islands, yes.
Yes.
And some of those, they belong to the British.
Yes.
Some to other EU. I think one of them is Sweden or...
What is Denmark? I think Denmark.
Denmark or Sweden, yes. Denmark. Let's see what they are saying now. They've been making noise about the occupation of Ukraine. Let the UK, US and other NATO member states rise and talk against Trump proposing to expropriate. While South Africa is just passing a bill to do things legally, Trump and every country has an expropriation act. America itself has expropriated land before. And these countries are very silent. And everybody is looking at the stupidity. And I think it's stupidity. You know, this glorified America that people have been... I think Trump has exposed how actually idiotic Americans are. And I'll tell you why. You have a head of state that goes and say this nonsense officially and unofficially. And I wouldn't say Twitter is unofficial because President Ramaphosa has fallen to the bandwagon. He also responds with tweets.
Trump has been governing via social media since his first term.
Exactly.
So it's not unusual now that something will appear on Twitter before it becomes government policy.
Exactly. Now, you see how Americans, and all of them, they believe, or those who still support Trump, they believe that South Africans are bad, we are reversing apartheid and racist and all that. I mean, it's not to say they can't read, but I'm saying, looking at how Donald Trump in the last 2 weeks conducted the American affairs and how the American people responded, you can see that they are naive people, actually. It has exposed them to say these people, they don't know what they are talking about. That's why they can be approached by anybody outside the USA. And when you put facts in front of them, they get surprised that, wow, is it like that actually in other parts of the world? But I think, on that note, I think our president must not fall into the trap. He must also act diplomatically. I think President Ramaphosa, by picking up the phone and calling Elon Musk, not even Donald Trump, Elon Musk. And his explanation is that, one, he's a South African boy. He knows South Africa. He knows that...
I don't think he identifies as a South African.
No, he doesn't.
If he could erase that part of his history, he probably would.
He would wipe it off. And I think our president representing us, you see, that's where my challenge is.
Sure.
He acted outside the corridors of diplomatic lines, or completely out.
Yeah.
He's a businessman, yes. He's got influence in American politics, yes. How many more billionaires have influence towards presidents in the world? How many more? So every time a billionaire who does not do anything actually for the Republic of South Africa jumps and says negative and racist things about us, and you phone that person expecting Elon Musk, because he's got roots in South Africa, to can explain our position. What is our ambassador in the U.S. doing? And we have got 5 diplomatic offices in the U.S.
Yeah.
And part of their duties is to explain and inform the media there. I would have rather seen South African ambassadors and consul generals and other diplomats on the American medias explaining our position. That is the duty of a diplomatic office, not the head of state to pick up the phone and call a former, Burki from Tswane to go and explain to him what is the position of the country.
What do you say to people who argue that, for instance, when President Ramaphosa tweeted, and it was very measured, explaining the position regarding the new land act.
Yes.
It was very measured, very factual.
I know it was factual.
But picking up the phone is him also playing the game that these guys are playing. Because these guys have thrown diplomacy out the window. So how else do I play the same game if I don't flout protocol myself?
It can worsen the situation. I've said before, you cannot tussle with a pig in the mud. It will come out victorious because it's used to the mud.
It thinks we're playing.
Yeah.
It thinks it's a game.
A pig, when you are in a mud, thinks you are playing and everything is the same. And President Ramaphosa, or South Africa, is not a pig. We don't play in the mud. We have always said we believe in diplomatic engagements. Why are we throwing out that out the window now. If it worked for us for all these years, we became a better country than the USA because of our diplomatic approach. It happened with Madiba. Mm. It happened with Thabo Mbeki when he spoke of the African Renaissance and he tried to unite Africa. And the Americans and the British were all over President Mbeki. Mm. It happened with President Zuma when he shifted the focus from the West to the East. He was under attack. We were consistent and focused on saying we will use diplomatic lines. If President Ramaphosa would have picked up the phone and phoned President Trump, even if Trump would have ignored the call or dropped it. Mm. You know, and I think it must also not be on the call because President Trump has the tendency of twisting things as well or refusing to answer things when he's cornered. I mean, is the president jump into the Inkunz or whatever that jet is and go and meet this President Trump and put him, you know, in front? Our diplomatic office in Washington with a seasoned and experienced a diplomat or ambassador like Rasool, they should have handled this thing. Let President Ramaphosa focus on his sauna and his challenges at home and the soldiers in the GRC and our role in the GRC. We focus in South Africa, then in the region of SADC, then in Africa, so then we expand to the rest of the world instead of being cornered by President Trump. Responding on Twitter, I don't have a problem with that because that's modern day communication platforms. And also, as you said, he was very factual and people will read things more on Twitter than going to Google the Land Expropriation Act.
Or going to the ministry's website.
Yeah, no. On Twitter, and it's a summarized version. Well done to the Office of the Presidency. Well done to Vincent Magwenya, the spokesperson, to also come out and clarify the country's position. But like I said, the fact that this act, it's in the wrong department, it has actually even failed. That's why it's been done by the president. It's safer there because then the public works minister will talk about government buildings. I've already heard the Democratic Alliance saying the government has fast land that they are failing to distribute. They're talking about part of the 13% that government has that they are failing to distribute. How do they want more in order to distribute? You can see the mentality of the old white settlers, you know, fear, bang, what do you call it? Black,
Swart Khafar,
you understand? Yeah. But imagine if that policy was sitting in the Ministry of Agriculture and Land Affairs, because it's not only agriculture, it's agriculture and land affairs or minerals affairs. But again, let it sit at the presidency, let it be managed from there in order to can protect the image of the country. I've already critiqued the act to say it's not going to deliver anything. It's just a smokescreen. It's a new version of, and I know President Ramaphosa is going to get hands being clapped during the sauna for signing into law. I've seen people already on social media saying, even Dr. Ndlozi has come out of the closet now or the wood now to say we were misled by President Ramaphosa. He signed into law the bills that nobody else was ever brave to sign.
That he's finalizing all the hot potatoes.
All the hot potatoes, yes. Yeah. Trust me, these bills, you can sign them, they're going to pile up dust. They won't deliver anything to us. Let me tell you one thing that has happened this week quickly. Mm. One of the bills that has been contentious is the NHI, National Health Insurance. It signed, the DA and AfriForum tried to go to court. They tried to say Ramaphosa stepped them on the back and they had agreed to consult. What? He made a U-turn. And that's where operationalization and activation of an act becomes important. Mm. You can sign the act. The minister that has to implement that act can change the rules.
Yes.
Or they must make the rules. They can make rules that makes it impossible for the act to be implemented. And I've seen it this week. The DA has managed to twist the hand of President Ramaphosa or the ANC to say the National Health Insurance Bill will not disturb and will leave medical aid insurances in peace. And the DA is happy. You see, what the Democratic Alliance is doing, it is protecting business, it is protecting white interests. Which black person owns medical health insurance? Mm. Even Bonitas, that has been an old so-called black medical insurance, look at who are the owners, who are the capitalists behind Bonitas. It's not black people. Mm. The administrators, the board could be black. And that's one of the things that shows that the ministers that are going to implement, like the Bella Bill. Who is the minister responsible for the Bella Bill or Act? It is the minister from the DA, you understand? Now, all these three bills that has been signed into law, the ministers that has to implement, except the health one, is still sitting with Dr. Aaron Motsoaledi. Mm. But everything else, it is the DA ministers that are supposed to implement it. And that's the political part that President Ramaphosa of the ANC didn't see coming.
Sure.
Signing the bill fresh, we can sign a bill. We have bills that has been signed and treaties and declarations from Mandela's time. Have they delivered what the ANC was formed for, the land? No. Have they took black people out of poverty, inequality, as well as, a basic education standard? Mm. No, they haven't. And we've got good bills. Why? The implementation has been in the wrong hands.
I was going to say, the power of any bill or law does not lie in what it says, but it's in the implementation or the enforcement thereof.
Exactly, exactly. Mm. I mean, for example, one of the things that I had mentioned to you was the expropriation bill, and people refer to Section 25 of the Constitution. This is not new. I've already explained. Yeah. It's an amendment of the 1975 bill. Sure. Secondly, Section 25 of the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa, that everybody has been making noise, Section 25, it protects property ownership.
Sure.
And when we say property, we are not talking about your house, your garage, or your what. We even talk about the land that can be agricultural land or mining land. You understand? They are protected. And if we don't change that section of the Constitution, We will not be able to implement the expropriation bill. It's sure. impossible because we will be doing something. That's why the DA is making noise about it. This bill is against, actually, the good intention of the Constitution of the Republic.
Sure.
And that's why I'm not excited about it. But I've put my head on the block last week to say, this expropriation bill, 4 years down the line, we will still be where we are as a nation.
Mm. Let's move on. Do you think President Ramaphosa will touch on what's happening in the DRC during SONA?
It is inevitable. He can't avoid that. Mm. This has taken a very huge turn. Mm. There's media reports, and a question came in parliament from there. I think it was the Democratic Alliance. Mm. I'm assuming, I'm not sure, to the, you remember the committee has been briefed. A question came from them, and I've seen one media article from a very seasoned journalist in the continent explaining how the Ramaphosa family or people close to him are involved. So you can't avoid not talking about it. We have lost, you know, men and women in Kemo, in the DRC. We still have many lying in hospital in Goma, some in on transit to South Africa to hospitals. So he cannot not talk about what's happening there. It will be the right thing for the president to respond to that. And this is the right platform. Because remember, he's addressing us as a nation. He has to put the nation at ease about what is actually happening there.
How do we know what is truly happening there? When there are so many stories, so much disinformation, Minister Motshega saying that no, our troops were never without arms and supplies, and then her deputy minister Holomisa saying actually they were. So already left hand and right hand are contradicting each other within the ministry.
Yeah, that's the problem.
And then we have Kagame saying, being very disrespectful to President Ramaphosa, calling him a liar, amongst other things. There's so much happening.
You know, how do we know? First, let me start with, before I go to President Kagame and Ramaphosa, a childish behavior.
Yeah.
And both of them, actually.
Sure.
The two ministers, Holomisa and Angie, it's a clear sign that there were no prior consultations before coming in front of cameras.
Sure.
You understand? Or having separate interviews. You know, that's what I said last week, rushing to go and respond to the public when you didn't wait for your generals, for your ground forces to write reports and brief you. And when you go and address the media, you've got one document that briefs the leadership.
But already, by the time they were briefing everyone,
yes,
we had been waiting for how long?
It, like I said last week, this is a military operation, and there's a whole lot of secrecy there. If these people have done their job prior to this attack in Goma. Remember, people have been questioning. There's been lamenting of, is South African soldiers well equipped in Goma? Do we have the resources to can carry on these operations in the continent and peacekeeping mission? There has been those questions in parliament, and they were never properly responded to. They tried again on the first day when they addressed the parliamentary committee not to respond fully. That's why the committee was very upset with them, and they asked them to come back again because they were digging, diving and refusing to answer questions. And when the committee allowed them to say, on the third sitting, which is next week, it will be held in secrecy, I understood why. That's what they should have done very firstly. Because there are things they cannot say to ask the public. It may anger the public. I don't think General Holomisa is lying or is talking not facts when he says it's not to say they lacked arms, but they may have suffered a casualty of the arms they needed to defend themselves at the time, the type of arms. Not to say they didn't have rounds or guns. Fresh, you are in a foreign country. You are being cordoned and surrounded by the locals who know the place and the terrain and all that. You didn't expect it. At times, you will need some soft. And they've got, for example, I've used the example of drones. You understand? If the South African base there, which had other soldiers from Malawi and other countries, had drones or air support, they could have seen these people coming before. But they were caught off hand.
But for instance, I mean, we have known for a couple of years that there is no air support.
Yes.
How long does it take to arrange air support? Whether it's we speak to another country or we say to Putin, do you have any MiGs that are sitting around? We need air support for our people. Saying to whoever else might be able to assist with air support. Because it makes no sense to be in a war zone, whether you are a peacekeeping force or not. Because there's now also that debate.
Yes,
whether it's a peacekeeping force or it's just a force.
Yeah.
How do you not have air support for that extended period of time?
That is lack of proper planning and doing your job properly. There's no explanation to that.
So, for instance, whether it's our frigates or whether it's our Rheinfalks that are out of operation, why are they not getting fixed or being put into operation in that period?
In defense of the ministry, having listened to them, I don't say they're telling the truth.
Yeah.
By the way, it is not true that all our Rheinfalks are out of operation. Some, but there's still a few left. Two, diplomatically, I can tell you there's an embargo. Part of the Nairobi agreement on the Great Lakes or the war in the DRC, part of the agreement of SADC and EAC was that they should not be, it's a no-fly zone during the course. So that's a diplomatic, South Africa was respecting a diplomatic agreement. But you are correct when you say, in absence of the attack, yes, you don't fly. But be ready.
Once Khunyi,
once it starts, then be ready to
You should be able to say, guys, we are going to die here.
And it has happened. Let me tell you, when I was stationed in Kigali, I told you I was covering the eastern part of the DRC. And one of the things that I knew from the guy who was from the intelligence, because I was scared to go there. I was young and scared. Yeah. One of the things they assured me was that there were boats on the Kivu Lake of our forces. And if something happened, they would have pulled me out of there.
Yeah.
So I used to drive from Kigali to Goma to do some work. And there were curfews. And because I knew, and I've went to inspect that there were our forces in Kivu Lake.
On the lake, yes.
Yeah, but also it depends on the relations. At that time, the former president of Rwanda, the young Kabila, was in, people say he was a puppet of Kagame, you know, before I go to Kagame. And there was peace there. There was not peace, but there was an arrangement and, you know, working relations together. The president, the then president of Burundi, was in good terms with Kagame. So South Africa had support of being there because of the three countries there, and Museveni and in Uganda and Kagame, they were in good terms at that time. So the situation was different. But at the moment, everybody's pulling that way. So it becomes very difficult. South Africa diplomatic relations with Kigali, and we spoke about it many times. It has now got worsened by President Ramaphosa and President Kagame last week. We started that.
So, for instance, the post by President Ramaphosa calling the Rwandan army militias. Like, who vets such posts? or at the very least says, we can't call them a militia because then you are pressing a different button.
I'm
because you could have tweeted that, for instance, without even including Rwanda, just for diplomacy.
I'm glad you are putting it. I hope people were asking that question. Somebody must have vetted those tweets or even the official statement. Remember, this was not an official statement.
Because I'm not a diplomat. Yes. But I know you don't use words like militia.
Yeah.
Unless you are implying that huna libshigi shiginyana somewhere.
And you are even being nice to the followers and the viewers. You are even saying, you can say the militias there. Don't say the Rwanda militias.
Exactly.
Because now you are actually pressing the wrong button.
Exactly.
And as a nation, if we don't want to accept that mistake, if I was in the diplomatic circles or in government or in the military, the first thing I would have done was to go and correct and issue an apology very quickly. Mm. That's what we should have done. Mm. We failed to do that. And from all corners, everybody started attacking Kagame. And being General Kagame, I don't want to say President Kagame, being General Kagame, he reacted typically like a soldier. We know the generals that have reacted like that. We saw during the Matabele Land War what the current Zimbabwean President Mnangagwa did. Mm. We saw when Botswana was the only country that stood up against President Mugabe.
It was Khama.
It was General Khama. Yes. You understand? We are seeing now how General Kagame is behaving and conducting himself.
We saw with this, Magnus Malan.
Malan actually was the real of modern day apartheid who enforced the Kruger's laws and be under Botha's nose.
The long and the short of it is, because you're an army general, doesn't mean you're going to be a great minister or president.
Or president, yes. Now Kagame then reacts.
Yeah.
In a very scathing way. Official letter, he went to Twitter, very long things and all that. And now he also uttered things that has been simmering. What is South Africa doing in the Congo? Mm. Can they tell the truth? The interesting part in President Kagame's message was South Africa is there under the pretext of a peacekeeping. Mm. You know, that happened after our show last week. Ne? Mm. You remember what I said on the show? I said, when we took our soldiers there around 2012, 2013, one of the questions that I asked was, there's already a peacekeeping mission.
Why do we need a parallel one?
Yeah. If we are there for peacekeeping, why do we have the SADC peacekeeping mission when there is the UN peacekeeping? These are the questions that our guys in parliament should be asking the South African National Defense Force. Why didn't we send soldiers? There's nothing wrong. I've already explained last week's episode that there is nothing wrong in us playing our role as peacekeepers in the continent. It is well within our foreign policy.
Sure.
But our people in parliament, if I was an MP or member of that committee in parliament, I would have been asking, why didn't we send our soldiers? If it is that important for us to go and assist Tshisekedi or to keep peace, we should have went there under the auspices of the United Nations. And even SADC itself, I'm not questioning South Africa only, even SADC itself, to can form a parallel peacekeeping. The other one is in the north, the other one is in the south. Why not under one umbrella? Now, before we came to record this episode, Tanzania and Malawi are withdrawing their troops as part of the ceasefire. Remember what M23 did? Mm. They called for unilateral ceasefire. They volunteered ceasefire. Mm. Then after the passaging of South African deceased,
they went back in.
They went back to start fighting. Mm. But now Malawi and the Republic of Tanzania are saying, in order to assist and to prolong this ceasefire and peace, we are withdrawing our soldiers. Who does it leave there? Us as South Africans.
And I can tell you now, they might be hiding behind in order to prolong the ceasefire.
Yeah.
But it's also, we have found an out.
Yes.
And we're going to take it.
Yeah. They found, exactly. They found an opportunity. And look at it also strategically. Tanzania is a member of both SADC and the EAC.
Yes.
A very powerful member of EAC. They are actually the current chair of the East European community, East African community.
Yeah.
They are the current chair. They are the ones who host, will be hosting the peace talks between Kagame and Tshisekedi today, actually, on a Saturday. That's one. Two, Malawi is a member state of SADC. Now, these two critical, and they're both, you know, bordering Rwanda and so forth. Now, these two critical countries have decided to withdraw before any loss of lives and what. But I also think they what rattled them, it's what President Kagame said to the EAC last weekend. When he asked them to say, why is Rwanda being blamed for supporting the M23? But nobody else is questioning who else is supporting who there. Yes. You understand? And I think, and again, people say, I'm protecting President Kagame. I'm not. I'm explaining the situation. You know, I had a 2-hour meeting with the Rwandese national in South Africa this week in preparing for the show. Mm. I invited that gentleman and I said, let's sit and talk. What is actually happening there? Yes. I know you've been, but I know he's got information from the ground. And I know he's a level-headed person. He's fair. He will tell me both sides of the story. And this man was simply saying to me, and I said to him, you know what? Our 2-hour meeting, you have shortened it. He said, the problem, because I asked him a question, what do you think sparked the whole thing? Now I always ask that question. I always ask people, what sparks genocide and fight and all that? And he said to me, it is because Kagame was extending, or Rwanda was extending its occupation in order to get more cobalt and coltan.
Yes.
And I said, the minerals,
yes,
they need more.
Mm.
Who needs more?
Mm.
Is the US and Europe.
In fact, every cell phone.
Yeah, not laptop, cell phone.
Yeah.
People are talking about artificial intelligence. America, I've said it last week, they've budgeted $600 trillion for artificial intelligence. That will not happen without what? Without the cobalt from the DRC. You understand? With that. And that makes sense to me. I don't say it's correct. Everybody has been eating there. Belgium, France, USA in their corners.
Are you saying it is not in the interest of the interested parties for there to be peace in the east of the DRC?
No. Let me tell you, Fresh, the Belgium.
Mm.
Remember, Belgium colonized the Congo.
Sure.
And from Leopold's time.
Mm.
The Americans, they are everywhere.
Mm.
The British or the EU. There are at least 12 South African companies doing mining. I don't say South African government. South African companies, people have linked some of those companies to Patrice Motsepe, who is the brother-in-law of President Ramaphosa. Some people have linked them to the former minister, Jeff Radebe, and his wife, who are ANC members and relatives of President Ramaphosa. There's those allegations, but I can confirm there are at least 12 South African companies. Who owns them? I'm not sure. That are operating in the DRC. So South Africa has business interests there. As a nation, you understand? Then we hear Putin coming from nowhere and saying, threatening Kagame to say, you don't touch South Africa, you must get out of the DRC. Rwanda, Russia has vested interest in the continent. Who would not want the Congolese minerals? Who wouldn't? So once there can be peace there, and the Tshisekedi or whoever government takes control of their minerals, obviously with their friends, depending who their friends will be, you know, it is not in the interest of others who are not friends. Now we've got Congo as a piece of cake that everybody has a hand, and Rwanda has an upper hand. So what Rwanda did for us to be where we are, they disturbed a party. There was a party happening there and people eating this cake. Some we have seen videos in the yesteryears of even the United Nations vehicles being used to loot gold and minerals from the Congo. I mean, we have seen those things in videos. We have heard reports. Rwanda came and Rwanda knew this thing for years.
Yeah.
That the Goma area is the richest part of the DRC with the minerals that are wanted by the world today, not gold. They're not interested in gold. Rwanda is selling this cobalt and minerals to Europe and other countries while they don't have even one mine in the Republic of Rwanda, not even one. And Rwanda knew. They just went to disturb a party. They just went to eat where everybody else was eating. So now people are saying, but Kagame, it's you, man. You disturbed us. We were eating here. And it's like, but why do you want to close me out? I want to come and eat also. So it's all about mining minerals. If I was in parliament, I would ask the Minister of Defense and the Deputy and the President, what are we defending there? There's a peacekeeping mission that we ignored. We formed another peacekeeping mission of SADC. For what? Why are we there? What is our interest there as a country? It cannot be our foreign policy only. And they went there to keep peace, to protect the civilians, the children, and the innocent. Good, South Africa, good. Did they manage to do that?
Sure.
Did we manage to stop the rapes, the murder, the killings, and the occupation of the Eastern DRC? Have we managed to do that? My answer is no, we have failed.
And the big question also is, looking at how other countries, East African countries, are withdrawing their troops.
Yes.
Surely this is also an opportunity for an out for South African troops.
For SADC as a whole, pull out. It's an opportunity. Use this opportunity to say the members of the EAC, the neighbors of the DRC, are pulling out. I'm very far in the south. We are not acting irresponsibly.
No.
We will be acting in a manner that will not tell a show to the world that we are taking sides. Yeah. Withdrawing at this time is not to say we are cowards. We've got a very big and best, the third best army in the continent.
Mm.
And I'm told they did very well in the DRC. There are official reports that the South African forces, killed almost 600 vis-a-vis 14. So we've got a good army. Retreating, it's not being a coward.
Mm.
You must know when to fight. And we were not there to fight,
sure,
to kill people and to lose lives. We are there for peace. One of the best, it's the only way of peace is to stop fighting. If you want peace, you stop fighting. Because they're in a battlefield, they're in a war now. Nothing will harm South Africa to say we are withdrawing, because others are withdrawing. Why would we be called cowards? Why would we want to avenge 14 lost lives to kill another 500 lost lives of African people? So it is time to raise a white flag and say to the M23 and the Rwandese and Tshisekedi, we've got bigger problems at home,
sure,
with our borders. We need our soldiers at home to go and fight these cash in transits. Lesotho has threatened us now that they want to be a part of Free State. And we've got other problems, and it's time to take a step back. You know, in Sesotho, they say, exactly. So we are retreating in order to go, to recoup. And assess the situation if it's safer for us to can come back here.
On that note.
Yes, sir.
Let's chechela morao so that we have enough steam for next week.
For next week. Okay, bye.
Thank you as always for your insights.
No, thank you very much, Fresh.
Where do we find you online?
Botsangm@gmail.com or 082-485-9100 on WhatsApp and social media handles @ Botsangm.
And that is all she wrote. Thank you for your interactions. Thank you for being a part of the discussions. Please continue to comment at the bottom of the YouTube video or start your own discussions on Facebook or on X. But let's keep the conversation going. Wow, what a week. Hashtag Politics with Botsang Modimoame Muilwa. We are part of the Africa Podcast Network. Email us at waw@africapodcastnetwork.com. Coming to you from AMP Studios, downtown Johannesburg. Shout out Trevor and his crew at Pezulu Works for all of the cinematography and to Otis the Flow Fraser for all of the imaging. Keletso Modisekeng is our executive producer. She's a new mother. Welcome to reality. Welcome to our world of being mothered, baby Marang. Till next week, have a wow week. In spite of yourselves, we're out of here.